Hello and willkommen, bienvenue, welcome to Lights Up on the Dark, the podcast where we explore the hows, whys, ifs, whats and whens of what it means to represent the Holocaust on stage. I'm Sam Michka.
I'm Alex Gellner.
And we are back for season two. How was your summer, Alex? What did you get up to?
Yeah, it was good. That's a lie. I don't know. It's been kind of a bummer summer. I don't know. The vibes are off, with the news cycle. It feels like, the sequel to last year. I saw this meme, and this is going to be perfectly on theme.
Okay.
I saw this meme last year, and I feel like the vibe hasn't, changed at all. Someone was like, I can't believe we went from brat summer to fascist fall. And then the caption is like, someone going to tell her that's literally the plot of Cabaret. And it hasn't changed. So, yeah. But, trying to find, the joy of the light where I can. Had a couple reunions, and that was great. How about you?
Good. Same. Bama summer, love that. Stealing that. We'll be using that liberally. Yeah, the summer's just been... I'm not going to overshare. Normally I do, because my personality needs context. But it was just...
But that's why we had a podcast, to overshare.
You're not wrong. But the summer did not go according to any plans. At all. Even a vague whisper of an outline. This group project did not happen. And we had so many plans for the pod as well. I was like, oh yeah, like YouTube, and we're going to do all of this and that. No, absolutely not. So I've just kind of gone, okay, we're just going to quietly forget that.
We just need a
and just keep marching forward, because when all said and done, tomorrow belongs to me. Yes, Cabaret references, come on. That was awful. Maybe cut that out. I don't know.
cut that.
But yeah, well, last season we gave our recommendations and updates at the top of this show. But this season we're going to switch things up a bit and do it at the end instead. So now
is that the plan?
It's that time again. It's time for the disclaimers.
All right. Number one, Sam and I work for outside organizations, but this podcast is entirely on us. We don't represent them in this capacity. We're not speaking for them. This is our passion project, although we keep getting more people involved, and because the more the merrier. So if you don't like something you hear, come at us.
Number two, the Holocaust is an incredibly dark subject. So because we work with it every day, we do use humour as a coping mechanism, otherwise we would lose the plot entirely. We are not mocking the Holocaust, we are not mocking victims or survivors, we absolutely never intend to be disrespectful. However, we do use dark humour at times, so please do bear this in mind while listening.
And number three is our rule of engagement. If you have questions, a suggestion for an episode, a correction, a comment, then let us know. You can find the contact details in the show notes. And depending on how you're listening, you can also post your comments directly onto the episode in the little comment section. Heard of it? Okay, enough of that. All right, disclaimers are over. You can stop skipping. We're here now, shall we?
Let's do it.
All right. So in case you hadn't already guessed from the little Easter egg and Sam's welcome and also my my foreshadowing comment on Bummer Summers, this week we're looking at Cabaret. And we wanted to do this for a while. And so it came about, basically, I was telling a friend that we have this podcast and what we cover, and the friend I was speaking to is very involved in the musical theater scene in New York, and so she asked, oh, so are you going to cover Cabaret? And I was like, I mean, I suppose we should. And then I came to you with it, and with the question, is Cabaret a Holocaust play?
And I was like, no, of course it's not. For the longest time, I was like, no, it's not, because one of the just outside the top three answers I get when I say, oh, I've got a PhD in Holocaust theatre, is so maybe like the fourth top response is, oh, so you look at things like Cabaret and The Sound of Music. Because people hear, theatre and they automatically think musicals, and then those are the first two musicals that they reach for that have Nazis in them,
Right.
or, the producers and things like that, because, why not? For the longest time, and I will very readily hold my hands up and go, I was wrong. Like, no, well, it's not a Holocaust musical. I mean, The Sound of Music is definitely not a Holocaust musical. It has Nazis in it, so technically it's a Nazi musical, which sounds very wrong out of context, but
That's musical with Nazis in it, but
okay,
not
it's a musical with
Holocaust.
Nazis in it. Okay, it's a Nazi musical. Yeah, Cabaret, I was like, no. And then you and I were talking about it, and to your credit, Alex, you were quite persistent and quite nudgy and like, no, I think we should look at this. And then I was like, well, any excuse to go and see the one that's on in London, because they've completely remodeled what was, I think, the Northumberland Playhouse into the Kit Kat Club, to the extent that when I did go and see it, I didn't recognise the theatre inside and was like, the hell is this? And had heard rave reviews, and obviously it had started with Eddie Redmayne as the MC, and now it's become, as well as a really great musical, this kind of like revolving door of, stars that are playing Sally and the MC.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I'll go see it and we'll just see. And then I went and saw it and was like, oh no, it's pretty
Definitely.
much Holocaust musical. Yeah, okay, I was
Definitely.
wrong. So I mean, when you look at Cabaret's history and how it came about, I mean, we'll talk about the story in a minute. But it's based originally, the very, very going right back to the OG, the source material is, Christopher Isherwood's 1939 novel Goodbye to Berlin. And Christopher Isherwood, novelist, a gay man, was in, sort of interwar Berlin, where, you sort of have the jazz and the debauchery and the decadence and, lots of sex, lots of drinking, lots of partying. The at the start of the jazz age. And then that was turned into a play called, I'm not sure if it's I Am Camera or I Am a Camera. I think it's I Am Camera by John van Druten. And then in 1966, Cabaret the musical, not to be confused with Cabaret the film, premiered, and it had music by John Kander, lyrics by Fred Ebb, and a book by Joe. I'm going to mispronounce the surname horrifically. It's either Masteroff or Masteroff. So that, and that was the original Broadway production, which was November 1966. And then that ran for nearly 1,200 performances. Then you have, I think it's the 1972 film, iconic, Liza Minnelli, Joel Grey, Bob Fosse doing the choreography, sexy as all hell. But in the background research that I was, and the reading I was doing for this, it seems that no two productions of Cabaret are the same. So the original one from 66 is different to the film. And then pretty much every professional production that's been done since then has either added or taken songs or replaced them. So theoretically, you and I might have actually, because you saw the one in New York, right?
Yeah, so it was the, London to New York transfer. So largely, I think the same, pretty much the same production. I think Redmayne came over with it. I'm not sure what adjustments were made, if any.
This is the thing. So, in technically, and when we've got more time and a sleepless night, we'll sit down and compare. But technically, we might have actually seen two different productions of the same show.
All right, we
If that makes sense.
might discover. I mean, we might have discovered that along the way, but they also completely transformed the August Wilson Theater over
Oh,
here into the
wow.
Kit Kat Club. And it was like I was sitting in my seat. I was in like, the balcony and, dead center, and I was looking around. I'm like, the August Wilson. I was like, wait, did I see Mean Girls here? And there's like this is definitely the same theater. And as I'm leaving my seat and taking the exit, I'm looking up and I'm looking at the balcony that was opposite me. And I was just like, right, those are the original seats. I was in the built ones. I was on the
Wow.
stage where Regina George singing Apex Predator. So that
That's
was,
the thing, right? It like completely t and did they have the pre-show
yes.
in yours?
Yes.
And it was so and I th and it's so clever because I'm always a little, I don't know how you feel, I'm always a little bit leery about productions that really go for that immersive element and kind of, let's get the audience involved
Yeah.
before they've even sat down. And I was like, oh, good God.
It's like, please don't look at me.
Yeah, I haven't made eye contact. First rule of audience
Yeah.
participation, if they don't make eye contact, do not pick on them. But it was, there wasn't that element. Like they were still performing to us and it was very sexy. And very gender fluid as well. Like there were some very, very beautiful men who were male presenting, but also kind of had that kind of gender fluid, androgynous look about them. And then they also had, I think there was at least one non-binary actor in the cast as well. And I was just like, immediately you've got that contemporary relevance. Because obviously you've got the jazz age and like I said, like that, the decadence and the sexuality, but then you sort of bring it up to the present moment with, trans rights and, LGBTQIA plus and just the ongoing thing of, they, whatever that means in inverted in air commas, have always been here. Trans people have always existed. Queer people have always existed. And so just kind of having that through line and then having them on display, but in a way that they have control of the space. They are, we are privileged to be watching them perform. Did they make you put stickers on your
Yes, I was
phone?
just gonna say,
Yes.
like the stickers were put on the phone, just being like, and asking, the audience to, be present, keep it inside the Kit Kat Club is what the stickers is.
Yeah, keep
Keep
it
it
in the
in the
Kit
Kit
Kat
Kat
Club, yeah.
Club.
So again, just that, even with that echoes of what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, keep it in the Kit Kat Club. And I was like, oh, this is not,
Like
oh.
everybody's so hot, and yeah, at
They
least with
were.
this production, I mean, that's undeniable, but even in this product, the interaction with the pre-show and even like during the show, I mean, because it's in the round, and actors would make their entrances and exits, and especially with the ensemble, they interacted before the show when they were making their entrances a couple times, and also the during the intermission, or the interval. And yeah, I think it's just it was probably just one of those adjustments they made to American audiences because Americans love to get involved.
This is the thing I should have checked because I went my companion, as all the best reviewers refer to the people they go with, my companion actually went outside in the interval and went back into the bar area. I didn't because I don't like being around the crowd, so I just kind of like stayed in my seat, swung my legs, and I wish I had asked him, oh, were they doing it? It never occurred to me that there might be an interval show as well. My God, whatever they're paying those actors is not enough. Can you imagine sort of
No.
performing from like an hour before the actual start time all the
It's,
way through and at the interval and then
I mean, they had special pre-show dancers actually for us that didn't show up during the play. So I think they were, pretty
Well,
fair with that
yeah, no, that's true. I mean, I got the
anyway.
impression that some of the sort of like the pre-show performers might also have been on stage, but I don't know. I was just too kind of. I was honestly, I was like a dog with six lampposts. I was like, this is so cool. Oh my God, must look at everything, must take everything in. But I think again, that comes into why Cabaret might not automatically be seen as quote unquote a Holocaust play, because it's all very sensual and sexualized, and I think that's kind of the main thing. But also, you know, the two main characters are not Jewish. Although they are a great metaphor for international politicians at the time. One's going, "This is awful, let's get the hell out," and the other's going, "It'll be fine, it'll all blow over." But we'll come to that shortly. I'm trying to think of why else because just for me, I spent so long going, "No, it's not a Holocaust play." I think because also it's set in, you know, late 20s, early 30s, you know, the Nazis are on the rise. That's very obvious. But then it just kind of feeds into that whole, well, is it even in the right time period? Right? You know, there's no active persecution going on at this time, but then Hitler's coming into power, so, and the persecution of the Jews did start from 1933. So,
I think I don't, I mean, I definitely, you know, I was kind of went, like, you know, cocked the head when my friend was just like, "So you're gonna cover Cabaret, right?" And I was just like, you know, because my memory of the play, because I hadn't seen the London, the New York slash London production yet, my memory of Cabaret is the Liza Minnelli film. And I just rewatched it just to refresh my memory, and I'm trying to think of like, why exactly didn't it, like, you know, scream Holocaust play to me initially, or story rather. And you know, I'm just watching it, I'm like, oh, just it, the rise of the Nazi is just, it feels just like, for the majority of the film is like, feels like set dressing, whereas in the production I just saw, it's brought, you know, dead center pretty
People
early
can't see this, but I am nodding so hard right now, like I'm gonna give
She's a
myself,
very enthusiastic, supportive
yeah,
friend.
I'm like, yeah. Give me a mosh pit, let's go. Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, that's exactly. Oh yeah, you put that so beautifully. I was like, why doesn't it? And yeah, you're exactly right. Like, it in the stage production, it is much more front and center. And I think as well, because when a lot of people talk about Cabaret and The Sound of Music, these are musicals, but they're also musical films. And I would say the majority of people have seen them as the films. So then the theatre purist in me is like, well, of course, now I'm not going to cover them. They're films. And then the actual live productions happen. I mean, apart from, so had you seen, before you went to see the New York production, had you ever, and obviously the film, but had you ever seen it live
I
before
saw
that?
one community theater production, and, you know, I went to support my friend who was playing Sally, and her mom was
Oh,
directing.
wow.
So, yeah. And I
In that
cannot.
case, we shall only say good things about it because,
No, yeah, for sure. But like, I just all so granted, I was younger, I was distracted by the, you know, talent and beauty of my friends, that I was just like, oh yeah, political stuff happening, moving on, and I want to see her sing Cabaret. And oh, I don't remember this song because they cut Don't Tell Mama in the, from the film. So,
So I think, so how old were you?
great question. Either junior high, high school, probably.
So 15, 16.
Something like that. Yeah,
Okay. So
maybe. I'd say like 14, 15.
my first encounter with Cabaret, I was either 10 or 11. Which in itself is immediately a little bit, not necessarily a red flag, but a bit of a beige one. It becomes a full-on red flag when, I mean, it was the 90s. People didn't care. But it was a group from my junior school. We got taken to see the local secondary school production of Cabaret. So this was, we would have been year five, year six, so 9, 10, sort of around that kind of age, going to see 16-year-olds performing Cabaret. I don't know who signed off on this. Like I said, it was the nine. It was a different time, yeah. It was a different century. It was a different. I don't remember anything about it apart from the guy playing Clifford berating Sally for having the abortion and going, "Damn it, Sally!" And then immediate and quite a credible American accent, actually. But I would have been about 10, so not
Who
the best
knows?
judge. But going, sort of, "Damn it, Sally!" And then immediately forgetting his lines and going, "Ah, f—" And that's my whoops. That's my enduring memory of Cabaret. I think I've seen, I may have seen the whole film, but again, when I was younger, only coming. But even sort of going back on, I didn't, for full disclosure, I did not rewatch it for this episode because I was like, too much information, lots of things going on. But reading back through sort of the synopsis and going, oh yeah, and like the names are changed in the film. And then sort of the Jewish character becomes Jewish characters. And the whole sort of the relation, the sort of subplot in the film almost becomes the main plot in the live production, from my in my humble opinion.
That definitely, that scans.
But how, I'm trying to think, how do we sum up the story of Cabaret to anyone who hasn't seen it?
All right, well, the way the film opens, it's 1931 Berlin inside a cabaret club. And so the way the play opens is, yes, we have the MC and he's introducing all the beautiful girls and the beautiful boys and beautiful orchestra. And then we briefly leave them and then see American on a train, Clifford, who is making his way to Berlin to write his book and give English lessons and to pay for his rent. And he is met by oh my God, Ernst,
Ernst, yeah.
his German man Ernst. And so they share a car together, and there's a official coming through to check papers and everything. They check Clifford's. They then and they ask like, "Is this all your? This is all your luggage?" And Clifford said yes. Then he, the official, goes to Ernst. Ernst gives him his papers, and then surreptitiously puts a little briefcase next to Clifford's to, as to hide it. And Clifford clocks this, and he's like, "Sorry about that. I brought too many perfumes and delicate things from France, and they would confiscate it. But it's harmless, I assure you." And then they, create a friendship blooms, and they just, he's like, "I'll hit you up for English lessons." We go back to the cabaret house. We meet Sally Bowles. Sally Bowles, and then Clifford gets a room, goes to the club because it's New Year's Eve, must find a fun time, and meet Sally there. Sally gets fired. Sally then glops on to Clifford because she can't live anywhere else because she was living in the club and she got kicked out. And then
They
their
start a
love affair starts.
relationship. Yep.
And then the rest of the story, and then another central character that I, completely missed because the cut from the film when I was first introduced to the story is Frau Schneider, who owns the building and rents out the rooms, and Herr Schultz, who is a tenant, and they have a beautiful friendship that looks flirtatious, and
And it's so cute because
it's the best.
it's beautiful because they're also middle-aged. So, and that's one of the things that I really love about the story is you have sort of the young couple, you have Clifford who's American, you have Sally who's British, and this kind of like quite idealistic and the world is fresh and young and new and exciting and full of adventure. And then you have Frau Schneider and Herr Schultz who are middle-aged and sort of more in tune, like Frau Schneider is quite not cynical, but she's very realistic,
Yes, she's very practical.
very practical and very well, you know, this is what it is and I have to make the best of it. So, and then their courtship with sort of, you know, Herr Schultz being a fruiterer and sort of bringing her, you know, increasingly more extravagant gifts, you know, like an orange and a grapefruit. And then he presents her with this pineapple. And that, you know, it's a beautiful, like really sweet, comic, touching moment. And then you also have the sex worker, Frau, is it Jost? I want to say Jost, who is living in, because, you know, you've got Clifford, you've got Herr Schultz, and you have the sex worker who is also living in there as well. Frau Schneider and Herr Schultz end up getting engaged. And everything is really sweet, and Clifford and Sally sort of give them like a crystal fruit bowl as a gift, and it's all very lovely, and they're
And
having an engagement party, and then
is a
Ernst shows up
yeah.
and they're like, oh, you know, come and dance, and he goes, oh, go on
Take
then,
off your
takes his
coat.
coat off, and he's of course got the swastika armband on. Frau Jost, trying to get into his good graces, then tells him that Herr Schultz is Jewish. And then Ernst sort of takes Frau Schneider to one side and says, you know, if you know what's good for you won't marry this man. And so then she's kind of umming and ahhing about, but not in kind of like a very, should I? She's, you know, she's panicked, she's worried, she does obviously love this man, she wants to be with him, but she's really scared because of everything that's going on. And then when she goes to speak to him in his shop, the window is shattered, and he says, oh, you know, it's just kids playing around
Just
and
kids
it's nothing. And
playing.
she's like, absolutely not, sorry, we're done.
Says me.
And then she goes back to the boarding house, gives the engagement present back to Clifford and Sally, but they're like, oh no, this will all blow over. And then that's when you have sort of that really powerful song, What Would You Do? Where she's saying, you know, when you get to my age and, you know, you can't just leave and you, there's so many doors are closed to you, what can you do? So the engagement ends, and then Clifford and Sally finds out that she's pregnant and doesn't know who the father is, and Clifford's like, it could be mine. Come back to America, you know, this place is going to hell in a handbasket anyway. Let's go, and you know, I'll take you back home and, you know, come to America. And he's kind of pressuring her and pressuring her and pressuring her. And then in the end, she goes and has an abortion, without telling him. He still tries to persuade her to come to America. And she's like, look, no, because that's just not what I want to do. I want to stay here and this will all blow over and it'll be fine. I'm going to stay here. This is where I belong. And then Clifford leaves, goes back to America. And then the sort of, I'm not going to give away the actual sort of like ending of like how the production looked at the very end, but there's a sense of Clifford has just gone to America and everybody else is left behind, with the Nazis becoming increasingly more powerful because we know how this is going to end.
And I mean, we should give some spoilers because I feel like the way the production, unfolded, at least the production that I saw, it really brings home, this is what, shouted to me. It's like, this is a Holocaust play. First of all, I mean, the Jewish characters in the musical, are it feels like the threat is far more present than in the film. I mean, in
Definitely.
the film, granted, there are Jewish characters. Like at first I was thinking, I'm like, they totally got rid of Herr Schultz. Are there any Jewish characters in this anymore? And then I'm corrected, yes, there is the beautiful heiress, and she is courted by a friend of theirs, who says Protestant on his papers. It's later revealed that he is also Jewish. So, and they go and get married. So a happy ending. They have resources. They're young, they're beautiful. They don't really have a choiceless choice, sort of a song break like Frau Schneider had in Cabaret, which I the play proper stage musical, which I feel like re really brought home for me, this being a story about the Holocaust.
I think, and that's the thing for me, because when I was watching the musical, Clifford and Sally's story almost became a side plot.
Right? Yeah.
Because I was sitting there, and I was sort of sitting there, and sort of the after she sings "Maybe This Time," and they're sort of like umming and ahhing about what to do, and then with all the action around, Herr Schultz and Frau Schneider, I was like, if this story was just Sally and Clifford, I would be so bored right now,
Right.
because there's no. It feels like the love story, or the doomed romance story that we've heard a thousand times. And I think if you'd actually take Frau Schneider and Herr Schultz out, it would be really bland.
Yeah, I mean, and they basically did in the movie, and how they counteracted that was just by making it all glitz and glam and adding a third man, Max, who has all this money and is like, showering both Sally and Clifford slash Brian with these extravagant trips and all, and flirtations, and you kind of get a, OG Challenger sort of situation where she's got two boys. And
But then you
yeah,
get the
so
Frank
just
and Furter situation
it's
where there'd be lots of non-heteronormative action going on, people.
so you're kind of blinded by all that, that all the money, all the champagne and the debauchery on that side, that you're just, again, you forget, which is, I think, also, it pretty interesting storytelling too, because you kind of get back into this, this lull of not a lull, but what am I trying to say? You forget where you are
Yeah.
and
Just a
who's right
bit of
for you.
escapism and just
Yeah.
kind of, oh,
Exactly. Until
drinking
you
and
see some Hitler
partying.
youth in a beer garden singing "Tomorrow belongs to me," and
Is it
then you're
wrong that
thrown back into
I
it.
think that that is possibly one of the best bits of the film? Because it's so
Yeah.
powerful, because you just have him singing, and he's got this beautiful choral, like choir boy voice, and he's singing, and then you start. The cinematography and the use of the camera angles, and then you start to realize that, oh, he's wearing a Hitler Youth uniform.
Right.
Oh, he's wearing, oh, and everybody is standing up and joining in to show that they agree with this whole tomorrow belongs to me. So then it becomes this less sort of like idealistic young boy singing about,
Yeah.
oh, isn't the future wonderful, to know the
Yeah.
world as you
Ev
know it belongs to us, and we are
yeah.
gonna.
Everyone stands up except one lone, presumably Jewish man, who's older. So, in age, tomorrow does not belong to him anymore.
And then did it immediately smash cut to the car driving away, and it's Clifford slash Brian and Max leaving.
Brian and Max leaving, and Brian asking Max, are you sure you can control them? Because Max had said, like, oh, we'll take care of the communists and we'll take care of the Nazis, it'll be fine. He's like, are you sure you could get a hold on them?
Hindsight is always 20/20.
Yeah.
Another thing that I liked about the musical is that there was something in it to make everybody uncomfortable. No matter who you were, there were. I don't know how outrageous they went in New York with the depictions of sex acts and
Oh, it
things
was all out
being.
there.
It was. I mean, it was very nearly genuinely all out there. But I just remember sitting there going, I'm not. I'm definitely not prudish by any standards, but I was sitting there kind of going, oh, God, good God. Whoa, 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 sweet child of mine. What is this?
A
But
lot
then,
of quivering thighs.
yeah, there, it was a lot. Gave my therapist a field day. But also the depictions of, from the Nazism and the anti-Semitism, the sexuality, and it was brazen and blatant, and it was calculated to make everybody uncomfortable.
Yeah, for
And
sure.
then even the elements of the patriarchy, because Clifford is a quote unquote good guy, but the fact that he's trying to force this sort of patriarchal view on Sally, keep the baby and come back, and you should come back with me and be a housewife and raise the baby, and she's like, no, I don't want that, and he's like, well, that's what you're doing. And I was like, Clifford.
It feels like we had very different Cliffords.
Ooh, go on.
Mine was, he was, I don't know, he was so much more gentle. Like, even when he realized that she had the abortion, he was just like, oh, Sally, why? Like, he was genuinely heartbroken. Like, he was like the gay best friend, slash lover. And I just, yeah, no, he broke my heart. He was, gotta give a shout out. No.
That's sad. Oh. Well, the Rob
Yeah.
Madge was playing. No, he was playing the MC. I can't
Cal
remember who.
Leon Smith, shout out to you.
It's really bad. We're going to cut this bit because I'm going to look
Sorry,
up
what
his name
happened?
and then say it's really bad because I
Sorry.
can't remember his name. Yeah, what? But no, Blank, who was playing Clifford, he was he yeah he wasn't sort of like this strident patriarchal type, but he sounds like he wasn't the same as, like you say, that kind of gay best friend slash lover. Like, he kind of was a little, he was somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
But I just found it really interesting that, you know, even it's nice that the good guys aren't entirely good and have their flaws.
Yeah. That's the thing.
Which also kind of feeds into the, as with Fear and Misery of the Third Reich, Cabaret the Musical highlights the different mix of reactions from quote unquote ordinary people to the rise of Nazism. So you have Fräulein Kost being a sex worker. She's on the fringes of society. She's seen as a quote unquote undesirable, but she's trying to cozy up to Ernst and show herself as a sympathizer because, you know, she's the one that's like, oh, he's Jewish. And then when they sort of have the reprise of Tomorrow Belongs to Me, she's front and center singing it. You have Frau Schneider, you know, it's when she breaks off the engagement, it's painful, it's reluctant, it's horrible to watch because you sort of just get this sense of they love each other and they do want to be together, but she's really, really scared. And then Clifford leaving the country and Sally's reaction of, oh, it'll all blow over. You know, like I said, it mirrors the sort of larger international political reactions at the time. And also, when you read something like Travellers in the Third Reich by Julia Boyd, which I recommend, which looks at foreigners who were living, working, visiting Germany, you know, you've got students, you've got Quakers, you've got governesses, you've got diplomats. And what Julia Boyd has done is she's gone back and she sort of looked through immense archival sources, letters, diaries, official, you know, documents, all those kind of things, and built up this image of what foreigners living in Germany and watching the rise of the Nazis, watching the rise of fascism and Nazism saw and how they reacted and what. So, you know, there were anti-Semitic foreign diplomats who were just kind of like, well, you know, the Jews have brought it on themselves, or others kind of going, this is not going to get better by itself. And then all the way through to, you know, Neville Chamberlain, Peace in Our Time. So the fact that Sally as a Brit is sitting there going, it'll all blow over. And then even when the Second World War started, people were, you know, it'll be over by Christmas. No, it won't. Sorry, guys. Hate to break it to you.
Like that.
So just the way that there's so many different reactions. And it's really difficult not to judge the characters.
And I and talking about the characters, I mean, if we could talk about the MC
Oh, yeah.
for a moment, because I mean, he starts the play and, you know, fun, loving, beautiful master of ceremonies. And as the play goes on, the in the production that I saw, you see, you know, in the film, I felt like, you know, the rise, the politics and the rise of the of fascism were a very quiet backdrop until like probably the very end. The MC for me kind of almost represented a can it was a front and center canvas of how fascism, Nazism was making a quick rise to power with the way that, his costume and then had evolved. And the depictions of Nazism just were like blown, literally blown in your face. And it was just, yeah, so it made it really, you start the first act just being like, oh, what a fun, sexy time, and then you just start tightening up.
Yeah, and you're like,
And
ugh.
then so do the characters on stage. Clifford leaves. Sally's offered a job back at the Kit Kat Club, but she's not putting on the costume she did before. She's putting on a bland brown tweed suit, and the MC is almost a puppet master for her, and she's rather painfully going through all these motions. I was very lucky to see Marisha Wallace in the role, who I know
Oh,
performed a lot.
so
Oh my
she's
God.
amazing, seriously.
Sadly, Billy Porter was he'd be sick. I hope he gets better soon.
Yeah, poor guy's got
So
sepsis. Like, what the
I
hell?
know, that's so scary. Speedy recovery, Billy. And so the we had a but I had an amazing understudy. Got to do another shout out, Marty Louder. Really well done. It was so he was almost the puppet master to Sally, and she rather painfully was going through all the motions. So by the time she did the song Cabaret, it was just it. I never heard a song like that before. She was. It was like almost like she was gasping and trying so hard to keep the smile on her face. And then, spoiler, but by the time I think we issue this, the show will be officially closed. The rest of the Cabaret cast, everyone who worked at the Kit Kat Club, they've been completely stripped of their, individuality, sexuality, gender. Almost they're all wearing these brown tweed suits, and they're completely unrecognizable. Like, they did their bows, so I'm like, that was, oh my God, that was Fräulein Costa. That was so, I was just it was and it was yeah and it just and it and that then that's just how it ends. And
And I am neither going to confirm nor deny if that's the same as the London one.
why not? Why can't you tell
Because
me?
it's
This is why
still
we're doing
going.
it. Oh wait, is it not closed yet?
It opened in 2021 and is currently booking till May 2026.
Good for you. All right, well, I'll just have to book a
Oh, was that a good for you in the same very American way that bless your heart has different meanings depending on
Oh, man,
whereabouts you
column B. I guess I'll just have to
are?
book a flight to London so I can come
I
see it.
mean, I think you should. I mean,
Okay.
it's you can file it under research, right?
Sure.
That
Maybe we'll
would.
cut that ending, but
I mean, the thing that I also find really interesting as well is that, and maybe we might have to pause and edit and things because while you've been talking, I've been trying to look up the name of the guy playing Clifford when I saw it, and he's not, I can't find him.
Okay.
Because they've now got, well, I'll carry on chatting with this, but then I'll run downstairs and get the program because it will tell me who it was. The thing that I find interesting now is that as of recording, say 10th of September, Clifford is played by Daniel Bowerbank, who is black. And I
Same.
think having a black Clifford adds an even deeper layer to Cabaret because when you think about Jesse Owens, 1936, Berlin Olympics, and also the fact that, when the US soldiers were winning towards the end of the war and, there were Nazis meeting black soldiers and saying to them, but you do know that the white men you're fighting with don't see you as equal. And also the fact that, these were men who were fighting on the front lines and who helped to liberate Europe and then went back straight home to segregation. What the hell? So then the fact that you have a black American in early Nazi Germany just adds so much more to it, I think.
Yeah, no, Calvin, who played the Clifford in production I saw, is also black.
It's just,
Yes.
yeah.
And I was really curious to see how that worked with a black MC, speaking to what, because Billy Porter.
Ooh.
So I'm bummed I couldn't see that and how that influenced his performance.
Oh, I'm just imagining the flair and
Yeah.
just, yeah. Wow.
Curious.
Yeah. Sorry, you can, I think, again, listeners can't see this, but Alex, you get to watch firsthand a sort of multiple cascade of pennies drop in my head and multiple light bulb flash goes off because I'm like, oh yeah.
Yeah, so anybody who listens and was lucky enough to see Billy in the role of MC, please
Oh,
sound
please tell
off in the
us.
comments and let us
We
know
want
about
feedback.
that was like, because
Yeah,
I'm
like,
really
was it
curious.
good? Was it awful? Did it work? Did it not work? Pile in. We want to know.
It doesn't have to be like you liked it or you know, like it was good or bad. Just like, what did you notice? How did that?
Yeah. Okay, we'll go with that.
Yeah.
Good, Amber.
Just
So,
observations, please.
yeah,
So, okay, so
observations.
in summation, so why is this a Holocaust play?
Idiot. Why is it a Holocaust play? I think that because the Jewish characters, which are kind of the side quest, are almost as front and center as the main characters, if not equal footing. Excuse me, I don't think they are minor characters at all, in my humble opinion.
No.
And I think if we move away from the classification of the Holocaust as being 39 to 45 and put it in its proper context, which was from 1933 onwards, because that's when the persecution started. The Holocaust did not begin with the gas chambers. It didn't begin with Auschwitz. It began with the words. It began with the propaganda. It began with the slowly increasing anti-Jewish laws. So I think when you put that in the context and the fact that there is real, you know, that the threat is depicted. And also as well, the song that we haven't touched upon, If You Could See Her, or the Gorilla song.
Oh, yeah.
That for me, from memory, like I said, I haven't seen the film in a long time, is the only overt reference to anti-Semitism and Jews that stands out. If you haven't seen it, the MC performs with, in the film, it's very clearly someone in a gorilla suit. In the musical, it's very clearly someone in a gorilla suit, but it's very naturalistic. So there's no kind of, in the film, there's like a flowery hat and a dress, and it's all very pantomimic. Whereas in the musical, it's actually quite uncomfortable because they were like almost beating up the MC and being very physical. And I was like, oh, not sure about that. But the whole thing is about the MC saying, you know, our society looks down on us and why can't people leave us alone? And, you know, if you could see her through my eyes. And then the final line of the song is, if you could see her through my eyes, she wouldn't look Jewish at all. And in, I, it was really funny because when I went to see it, sings that line, if you could see her through my eyes, she wouldn't look Jewish at all. And somebody from like three rows away just went, and I wanted to go,
Yeah.
first time out of Kansas, Dorothy. But
And
then was
like,
like, no, I can't judge someone just because I know. And this might be their first exposure to it and their sort of first real understanding of, oh my God, and you know, so it's just that.
Yeah. Well, it's no secret when Adam Lambert was in the MC role, there was quite a bit of controversy and anger because apparently there were some I mean not towards Adam but towards audiences because apparently there were some performances where people were laughing at that line. And not like in an uncomfy, like they're not
It's not
uncomfortable
nervous
laugh,
or
not a nervous laugh, to the point that Adam Lambert reportedly not breaking character, but looked right at the audience and was being like, no, this is not comedy. Pay attention.
Nice.
When I went, it was dead silent. And I don't know again if like this has changed in the production or if it's a production you saw. I mean, it was very uncomfortable. Because the way that the audience members had described it, the way Adam Lambert told what sung it, is that he was cradling the gorilla's face and singing that. In the production I saw, the MC makes a finger gun
Oh, damn.
at her, and the music cuts out. It's like she wouldn't look Jewish at all. It's terrifying.
Oh, yeah.
And then has this like maniacal laugh right after. The whole audience, like, just we were all just ice.
Yeah.
To the point, like, we didn't even applaud the actor
You're just
after
like,
the song. We were just like, we're sitting on our hands practically.
yeah.
And then
Ugh.
and when this was going around, it seems like Joel Grey, who played the role in the film, Liza Minnelli, wrote an opinion piece for New York Times. We'll drop the link in the show notes. He says, "I'm hearing from friends in the current Broadway production of Cabaret that the line is once again getting an audible response." When he did it, there were, shocked gasps, but of a different sort. On more than one occasion in the past 2 weeks since the election, a small number of audience members have squealed with laughter at "she wouldn't look Jewish at all." In the late 1960s, we softened the line because the truth was too hard to hear. Today, it seems the line is playing exactly as the Nazi sympathizing MC would have intended.
Because that's the thing in the thing that I like about it in the film is that when Joel Grey sings that line, you have that sort of really tight close up on his face. It goes, "She wouldn't look Jewish at all," and then he immediately goes into this maniacal foot drumming kind of like, it's like self mockery or kind of going, "Look, I did the joke, I did the joke, ah, isn't it really funny?" But kind of. It like you say, it softens it. It doesn't negate what he's said, but it kind of goes, "Oh, that's what they're all saying now, isn't
Well,
it? And
it's
look, aren't I pandering to the regime?" But it's not, you don't take it as he means it.
It's like, so it's softened in the film in that way. It sounds like when they first performed it in Boston, they softened it to making it a Yiddish word for ugly person.
Oh.
Yeah, he says in the article, like, she isn't a Meeskite, Meeskite. It's not a Yiddish word I'm familiar with.
Yeah, Mesquite,
I
Mesquite.
will be, listeners are yelling at me right now.
You pronounce it like this.
And in the article, he says, like, I don't know, this could be triumphant laughs of the complicit, suddenly drunk on power. It could be uneasy laughs of an audience that has retreated into the comfort of irony and detachment. Honestly, don't know which of these versions I find most ominous, but all of them should serve as a glaring reminder of how dangerously easy it is to accept bigotry when we are emotionally exhausted and politically overwhelmed. So, yeah, I think that sums it up very nicely.
And I hate to say it, and we may cut this, but I also wonder if people feel, those people feel that that was okay and appropriate in the wake of the current situation between Israel and Palestine. Which is anti-Semitic, in case there was any doubt. Public service announcement, people, not all Jews are responsible for what Israel does. So again, sort of that feeling somehow that it's okay to be anti-Semitic because of what is happening in a country
Yeah, none of the Jewish community
thousands of miles away,
be doing
and
that.
yeah. So it's I'm we'll leave that for there, but yeah. So I wonder to what element that might factor in. So yeah, we were saying about why it's a Holocaust play. So yeah, and I just think the Like you say, you put it so beautifully, and I'm so envious of the way that you're able to put it, is that the Holocaust aspect and the rise of Nazism and the persecution of the Jews is not set dressing. It doesn't perform the backdrop. It's not the chorus, it's not the ensemble, it's literally main characters. And so I think that's, and because I, like I said, had only seen, had my brief encounter with it when I was about 10, and then having seen the film a few years later, but then having not seen it again for a few years, kind of going, no, of course not. Having now seen the musical, yes, Cabaret is a Holocaust musical.
For sure. So for that reason, I would say, if you must bring it to the classroom to teach the Holocaust, you can leave the film at home.
Yeah, please do. Please do.
It's unless you just out of curiosity, absolutely, and it's interesting to see how it's adapted from stage to film. Like that's a fun activity, a fun project. But if you're to bring into the classroom, if you want to bring it to the classroom, I would do, read the Yeah, the stage play and bring those songs in.
I mean, that's
Suitable
the thing
age
as
groups.
well. I mean, I'm not even sure that it's something you'd bring to the classroom necessarily. I mean, unless, so for example, you can watch the I think it's a 1993 Sam Mendes production. Did he direct it? And it was Alan Cummings and Jane Horrocks as the MC and Sally Bowles. You can actually get the full recording of that on YouTube. It's, admittedly, it's not a great recording, but if for example, you are a school and you have limited resources and you can't afford to take the kids to go, especially here in the UK, like, the cheapest tickets, as when I went to see it, were £30 each, which, is not bad, but it's a lot for a school trip. That's something that you can, and the beauty of watching a recording is that you can do it in sections. And you don't have to give it to the kids all in one go and go, right, we're going to sit and watch this for like 90 minutes, whatever.
Yeah, and when we say kids, I would say probably like
14?
okay. I think I trust British kids more than I do Americans. I would say 18
I
and up for
don't.
me.
I think that the recurring theme of this podcast is why do Alex and Sam always kind of, it always comes back to, as a teacher, your students, and you know whether or not there's a particular class that you're like, absolutely no way, I would not let them anywhere near this, versus, other groups who are like, actually, yeah, no, they would really engage with this. But yeah, don't. I loved my junior school. Don't do them. Don't be getting your 10, 11-year-olds to watch Cabaret.
My God, that was
Please
so
don't. And I
crazy.
don't know. I sort of look back. Oh, it was a different time. Yeah, it was a safeguarding. What safeguarding? What does that even mean? But the thing that I really like in terms of the educational perspective is obviously not only because it's a new way into the material and it's pre Holocaust proper in very inverted quotes, is that on the Cabaret website for the London production, they actually have an education section
Oh, that's
with
great.
three different packs, right? So they have a production overview, which gives you insight into the not synopsis and themes and the creative processes of how this production was created. And then in
Good.
pack two, you've got interviews, careers information, and discussion points about the show, inspiration for the cast and creative teams, and ideas for further research and reading about Cabaret. And then in pack three, you also have classroom and studio activities and key information to help you write about the production for any live production analysis required for your GCSE or A-level exams in the UK. And it also includes sample paragraphs about the different production elements, photographs that you can annotate to help you revise. Like, I was like, these guys have put some work into this. I've just pulled the website up as well, and they actually have educational rate so that you can book
Oh my gosh, I
to
wish.
go and see it, and the tickets are reduced to just under £30 each. So yeah. But I just, the fact that they've actually gone to so much effort and put these education packs together. And then, yeah, I just think that's brilliant.
Wow. That's amazing. I don't know if there's anything like that for the Broadway, but that's so cool.
And again, the themes that we touch on, contemporary relevance, of course, it speaks for itself, really. I think we've already
Yeah. I think
covered that.
but Joel Grey's opinion piece, I think, really sends that home. Highly recommend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as well, because we are seeing the, like I always say, history doesn't repeat, but it rhymes. And we're seeing, anti-Semitism on the rise continuously. And it just comes in waves. It seems to never stop. It just seems that there's an ebb and flow, rise and fall, but it never stops. It never drops and consistently stays low, which is incredibly depressing. But I think as well, with sort of the themes that we've discussed around, well, this is how people reacted to it then. How are people reacting to it now? You were talking about memes at the top, and I don't know if you've seen the one that says, "Your first name and your last name is your Nazi fighting nickname."
Whoa. Wait, when was that?
That's been doing the round. Funny enough, it started doing the rounds around about 2016. Can't think
Oh.
why, but it's just that whole thing of, what would you have done then? What would you do now? Your first name and your last name. So it's
Yeah.
basically saying that's what you should be doing. Alex, what were the highlights of educational highlights of working with Cabaret? Apart from the MC, who's just the most
Wow.
complex,
Yeah.
amazing character.
I mean, highlights. I mean, this reason I was like thinking this would be a good season finale. Just it's just nice to have, little song and dance to
The thing that
bring a message home, but
with the thing that I find with it, I mean, I suppose this is a highlight, but also a challenge, is the songs are real earworms. So, Willkommen stays in your head. Tomorrow belongs to me. You get that stuck in your head, game over. Maybe this time, belt it in the shower. Do it. So
So
yeah,
it stays with you.
it stays with you, and I think it feels really reductive to just say it stays with you, but it does, and you will keep thinking. Little bits will suddenly randomly pop into your head now and then, and you'll go, oh yeah, do you remember that? Oh yeah, and just thinking about it. But again, that's one of the challenges of it, is if you don't want the ultimate Nazi Holocaust musical mashup going around in your head, Tomorrow Belongs to Me, If You Could See Her Through My Eyes, is not a good medley. Wouldn't recommend. And I think as well, challenges of working with it and seeing it again is sort of the maturity level of the students. Some of them might find it quite upsetting. And also the maturity in terms of some of the sexuality. Because it is, I mean, I'm 30, blah, 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 and I was very like, okay, I feel uncomfortable watching this. So I think there's that element of it. And again, just the risk that students or anyone really would sort of take the songs and be stupid with them, and sort of be turning them into like, repeating the same line over and over again to try and get to somebody, or some of the things in that. But again, it's a chance we take with anything we do when we're working with young people, right?
For sure.
So on that note, any final thoughts, conclusions? I mean, we'll say it again, Cabaret is a Holocaust play. It's a Holocaust musical. We've
And
established that.
I'm really jealous. I'm sad that it seems like it's coming to a early close, earlier than they anticipated, in New York on the Broadway. So, if you're London and you're in London, I would say take advantage, the fact
I
that it's
see
running
it.
till May. That sounds like something one wouldn't want to pass up. I
I
highly
think
recommend.
exactly, and with the London production, I think it's really promising that you know, for years, literally, they've been saying, "Oh, now booking until this date," and it gets a couple of months down the line, they go, "Oh, we're now booking to this date." So it feels almost like a marketing thing
Okay.
rather than a, "Oh, it's going to end at this date." It's like, "Oh, no, we've got tickets available now up until we've opened the booking now up until May."
Oh, okay.
And then a couple of months it'll be, "Oh, you know, we've opened it up till June, July. Oh, it's now booking until here,"
Okay.
because you just do get that whole experience. And you know, like if you've got the moolah and you want to spend the money to sit at one of the cabaret tables literally in the middle of the action and have food and have the, you know, the telephones that you can pick up and ring the other tables on and all this kind of thing,
Were
you
they
can't.
functional
I
phones?
think they were. I
Oh
think they were. I don't know. I don't know. Don't quote me on that. People are going to be yelling at the speakers, going, no, they weren't. It's just, but yeah. And it was, you know, you get that level of interaction, and it genuinely becomes, I mean, the whole, no matter where you're sitting, the whole thing is an experience, but you genuinely get that real, you're in the kit club now.
Yeah.
Leave your troubles outside.
Yeah, there's something to that line too. That seems to be the whole philosophy of,
Oh.
a lot of the characters in Denial.
Oh, great. So now I've had bummer summer. I'm about to move into Thalia's Fall. Oh, how
Oh,
such fun.
yeah.
But
Right.
the wheel
Well,
always turns.
yeah, America, make sure you're registered to vote.
Yes. If you haven't already registered to vote, please register to vote. Please,
check.
please.
Please double triple check because you never know
Yes.
what kind of shady things they're up to.
Speak
Yeah.
to your friends, get them to vote.
Yeah. Drink water, give yourself a hug,
Take
give
the
everybody a
recycling out.
hug. Yeah. All the
Don't
things.
forget to moisturize your face. And we will see you next time.
See
And
you next time.
the little tease we will give for next time is that we have a very, very special guest, and a dear friend of mine. And I am so excited because Alex, I've been trying to get you and her together in the same Zoom room for what feels like forever. And now it's
Yeah.
going to happen.
It's
So excited.
gonna
Happens sometime. Anyway, so we're going to skip off into the sunset singing Maybe This Time. And we will
happen.
see you next week.
See you next time.
Take care, everyone. Bye.
Bye.